Hi, my name is Joe Jackson. I'm a journalist, author, interviewer, broadcaster, and more recently a documentarian. I've interviewed roughly 1,500 celebs over a nearly 30-year period, and one can never know when interviewing a new talent how far into the outer stratosphere of stardom someone will go. That certainly was the case when I first interviewed over the phone Cillian Murphy, who was relatively unknown and appearing in a play called Disco Pigs. As you'll hear at the start of this podcast, Cillian reminded me of that when we met again to do another interview in 2004. Now this week ending May 10th, 2024, he may win an Oscar for his riveting role in Oppenheimer. I hope he does. But by way of celebrating this magnificent trajectory in his career, I want to post the full interview we did in 2004. I've previously posted segments from it, but it was only after some listeners said that Cillian nowadays is rarely as open during interviews, particularly when it comes to his private life, I thought that his fans might like to hear our entire exchange. I will be uploading the finished article onto my website, joejacksoninterviewer.com. In the meantime, enjoy.
Perfect time.
Okay, would you like me to break your nose?
What?
It's a lightweight intro.
All right.
Marlon Brando once said that the best thing that ever happened to him was when he was sparring on the set of A Streetcar Named Desire. His buddy, Buddy Cox, broke his nose and it made him less pretty. And he thinks it's the best thing that ever happened to him.
All right.
So any inclinations? I'm not asking you, will I do it personally? The pretty image, because I have a question that an actor gave to me, a response when I told her yesterday I was coming down to see you. The first thing she talked about was, she said, you have to see 28 Days Later. He has fantastic eyes, and then he's fantastic in it. But it's like the first thing is the physical thing. So what I'm asking you, is that any kind of a drawback? Is it something you're aware of? Do you give it down? Because I've seen also the Elle magazine covers, the big close-up, you know?
Yeah. We decided to come up here to him, if that's all right. Do you need to work here?
No,
we'll go downstairs. Sorry for that.
Is it any way drawback? Is it any way partly what you're happy to be?
It's not providing. Something that has ever really been part of my sort of, you know, acting consciousness or whatever way you want to describe it. I've never just want to be a good actor, you know.
But has it become more to the fore this year with the high media attention and the kind of magazine covers and all that?
Well, 28 Days Later did well in America. It made a lot of money.
Right.
So therefore, the way this system works over there, people become interested in you if you're in a film that makes a lot of money, sort of almost arbitrarily, like almost, you know, regardless of your performance in the in the piece itself.
Yeah.
And so then they put you in magazines and stuff. But that's the way Hollywood works. And, you know, I think I've been pretty good with, in terms of not spreading myself too thinly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I've been pretty choosy in what I do in terms of publicity, but it's the nature of the beast. You can't avoid it. You can't...
Well, would you purposefully avoid selling yourself as a kind of sex symbol, male fantasy figure, romantic figure, whatever it is?
Yeah, I've never really felt under pressure. Oh, yeah, good luck, man.
Good luck this year.
Good luck. Okay. I've never really felt in any under pressure to be pushed in, but I've got really good people looking after me. I mean, the thing about doing magazines and stuff is that it's part of the game.
All right.
I don't do TV. I won't do live television. I won't.
Right.
I don't want to become a personality in any way.
Okay.
But in terms of the physical thing, it's never been an issue, and I don't think it's ever so far limited me in any way.
Okay. Does it become an issue in this? And the last question about 28 Days Later, snapping your willy all over the screen. Because a lot of women have to ask themselves, well, even if being there in the first scene, and there's a few nude shots in it, did you have to make a decision? Like, Charlotte would make decisions against a movie or for a movie, depending on if the context is right. Did you automatically feel, no, this is okay, it suits this sci-fi, this kind of zombie horror genre?
Well, if you want it, in terms of the narrative of the story, we meet this character, and he's like, it's, you know, it's like Adam, he's like the last person left, and it's like a rebirth. There's so many different reasons that it's justified. Also, it cuts straight from Monkeys, so you've got this, like, this sort of simian, like, pose that he's, you know, like, and it was like, there's all these different reasons.
Okay.
It's like he's born again, so it doesn't bother me.
So it seemed right, rather than to be in the green suit you then put on, to be actually nude in the first scene.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I think it's an arresting image, a striking image. And, and you know, Danny Boyle is not a stupid man. He's a very intelligent man. And we sat down and talked about it. And once I can rationalize a decision in my mind, then I'm happy to do it.
I heard your family give you flack though when they first saw it, or your buddies laughed at it when they first saw the scene, did they?
Well, I mean, it's not your first introduction of the character in the film. Yeah, but sure, fuck it. It really, really is a, you know...
It's small, of little importance. But can you see the sense in the question? That if you do become, you're saying you avoid becoming a celebrity, if you do become a sex symbol or a romantic icon, it could detract from just the purity of the acting.
But your question being, do you want me to break your nose? I suppose, how the fuck do you avoid something like that? And I don't know. I mean, I am what I am.
But you're aware of these processes.
Yes, but I don't make an effort to present myself as these parts or this perception. I certainly don't put any effort into like appearance or anything like that. So that is just something that I can't do anything about. Is it?
Okay, tell me a little about the 20-year-old who wanted to follow, who did the Zappa kind of fascination. And you know, I was one of the last people to interview with Zappa. In his house.
Actually, I spoke to you on the phone.
Did you? Did we talk on the phone?
For a hot press.
Very good. I thought.
Because you told me this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. We had a great chat.
That's right.
All right.
When I was doing the thing in the gate.
Oh, neat.
And we spoke on the phone.
Absolutely. So there you go. Tell me a little more about that kind of, and how your folks apparently didn't want you to do that.
Didn't want me to do the
get
music.
Get into the world of rock. I saw a quote somewhere in the claws of the music industry. It wasn't something they wanted.
Well, what happened was, you know, we're very young. I was like 18. My brother was 16 or so when the whole thing, because we've been playing music all my life, and then we were big, you know, big Zappa fans, and then we got offered this record deal.
By whom?
By Acid Jazz.
All right, okay.
And it of course, my parents were like, we're going to lose our two sons to the fucking jaws of, you know, which is one of the dirtiest industries around, you know?
But were you aware of that, or did they have to tell you? Were you aware even at that stage just how dirty and how soul-destroying?
Well, I knew when the deal came through, it was like 50 quid a week, and they would own all, like I used to write the songs, they'd own all my fucking songs and own everything, and they'd have us for 3 albums and whatever. Like the way every fucking band who signs a deal, you basically, now unless you do your publishing, which bands are smarter now, but we were basically, would have signed away everything. So I think in retrospect, I think we were quite smart in that we said no. To the thing, and
but how big a dream was it for you?
That was huge, and I mean, I spend all the only thing extravagant in my life, I think, is in my lifestyle is my stereo system and buying music and going to gigs. You know, they're the only things I would.
So, you bought a stereo system and you lived in a flat rather than and then took a run down sofa off the street.
And it's you,
did you?
I picked up one or two bits of furniture off the street, but. Anything.
All right.
That's
cool. That's a cool gesture.
Well, if it's nice and nobody wants it. No, but yeah, it's so therefore it was a big, massive part of my life. And it, you know, it still is a part of my life.
And the moment you decided, I'm not going to go, my folks are right, or I see through it all and I ain't going to go there, we're not going to go there.
Mm.
When was that? Did your brother agree?
Well, he did, yeah. No, there was 5 of us in the band and we all made this. I'm very close to them. I'm going to see the drummer now has signed up since to another label, so I'm going to see him play tomorrow in Dublin. And yeah, so, but we're all very close. But we all agree that this was the right decision. And and happily, I think because that company went belly up like 2 years later.
So where did that leave you then in deciding what to do? You immediately went to study law, or did you immediately go hassling the director of the theatre, or what?
That happened. The deal thing happened during the first year of law.
Oh, did it? All right.
Basically, a lot of things happened in 1996, the end of 1996. When we were offered the deal, I got the part in Disco Pigs. I moved out of home.
All right.
And
to where? To London? To?
No, I just moved in.
Oh, somewhere else?
Yeah.
Where were you born?
Cork.
Okay, so you just moved out of the family home?
Yes.
But is that true that you got your break by hassling a director who finally said, your persistence has paid through, I'll see you?
Well, there's a sort of a...
And who was that?
The director of Disco Pigs, Pat
Kiernan. Oh, okay, all right.
This is his name. And he's the artistic director of Kirkcaldy Theatre.
Okay.
But he had taken it... When I was in fourth year in school, he had taken a drama module class with us in school when I was I would have been 16. And that was the first time I'd ever experienced anything of, like, performing or acting and... And then, as a result of that, I'd see him out, like, pissed around Cork, and I'd...
You'd be or he'd be?
Well, I probably would be more pissed. And I'd annoy him then. And fair play to him. you know, he saw me for that part.
And what was the sense that day in school in the drama module? What was the sense you got when acting or performing? What did you feel? Did something right about this? Or
I got a huge kick off. Similar to the acting thing, similar to the music. You get this, when we used to play music and you'd get this rush up your spine. It was like drugs or like good sex. I don't know, something, and you'd just be like, and then
fully alive for that moment of time.
And I think it's chasing that feeling. And I got that once or twice in that module, just messing and improvising and stuff as a kid. And then I went to see loads of Kirkadurka shows, like they did Clockwork Orange and Sir Henry's.
Okay.
And it was fucking cool. It wasn't like state old theatre, it was just cool.
It's rock and roll, isn't it?
Well, it can be close to...
Yeah, well, especially Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost, at its soul and essence, it's rock and roll.
And he did such... And Pat Kiernan did such a fantastic interpretation of it. Like, it was in the round, and it was all, like, there was guys on stilts, and it was just fucking cool. Like. Right. And I thought, there's something in this. And I just thought he was the coolest guy in Cork, anyway.
And that led to Disco Pigs,
eventually.
Did you relate to that character in Disco Pigs? Could you relate to the character in Disco Pigs? Because you were locked inside it for a long time, weren't you?
Well, yeah.
Was it 18 months on stage and then...
18 months about on stage. And then, but it was a hiatus of about 2 years in between I did...
Between the play and the film.
Yeah.
But could you relate to the characters? Because you said about one of your characters, I don't know which one it was, that you could identify with the loser in the character. I think it was one romantic lead you played where you just said there's a part of us that identifies with the loser. I mean, how much can you identify with those aspects of... Like the Disco Pigs character, or
the Disco Pig. I mean, you try and distill it down to something simple, don't you? And I don't necessarily think you have to be able to identify.
Right.
For me, I think you have to be able to like understand. Act. Well, you know, I think. But what fuels that is like an understanding of why the character is in the situation. Well, for me, I have these ways of working through it. Like I need to rationalize, understand, and then I can access whatever ability I have or whatever emotions I have.
Right.
To convey those feelings of the character, the emotions of the character. With Pig, it's basically like his whole life has been given over to this one character, which is this female character. He's got a blinkered vision since when he was born, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So...
In what sense since he was born?
Because they're born together, in this side by side in the hospital. And, he's never matured, right? He's like a child, you know, and he acts on impulse and he cannot, it's Siamese almost, or co-joined without being like that, you know, that when she's taken away, he can't sustain life. Right?
Did you ever have that kind of symbiotic feeling with a woman?
Woman.
Now, I'm not talking about it as a good thing even, because that is dangerous to get that interdependent. I'm not talking about, have you been in love, are you in love? I'm talking about that kind of, if she leaves the room, my breathing's affected.
No, I haven't.
You know, not that kind of, which can be dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. And this relationship is because it traps two people, you know. And what happens in the Disco Pigs is that she leaves, and obviously he can't survive. And...
Are you wary of falling that deeply in love? Has it just not happened?
No, I'm involved with someone.
Are you?
Yeah.
But just not to that extent that it's a symbiotic union, an interdependent kind of dangerous.
No, I don't think love, for it to be interesting, has to be dangerous, you know.
So... Well, a lot of black romantics do.
Well. I would have to disagree, though. Yeah,
No, fair enough. Are you you're in a relationship for a long time, if I'm right?
Yeah.
This is 5-6 years. Because I read something on you last night that said you were with a person 1 year. I don't want to give misinformation.
No.
You're in a relationship through all this, through the whole time.
Yeah.
Okay, can you talk a little about her?
Yeah.
Is she from here? Not too much. I don't want to violate her, right? But is she someone that was with you before everything broke in 96 or 97, 98?
Yeah, she knows me a long time. Yeah.
All right. Okay. And does that give you some kind of grounding, especially this year, or what's forthcoming in 2004? Do you feel it's good to have something that's of my life before this? She keeps me grounded, you know, there's a reality there? Or
more, I think, than anything else, I'm a person that's always needed companionship. I know I always need, I'm not very good on my own.
All right. Did you ever try it?
Being on my own?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't know if I wasn't good at it if I hadn't.
Well, that's true. Yeah. No, but a lot of people go straight. I was talking to Melanie Clark Pullum, the woman who said that about you yesterday, this actress in The Big Bow Wow. She said she went straight from home into one relationship, straight into marriage. And she'd never spent a week living on her own.
Mm.
And I think everyone should try it sometime. I'm not saying you didn't. But I think it's almost to get to know yourself.
I agree, yeah.
Without someone else.
Yeah.
And then you can say, well, now I can give this self to you. The self that could exist if you die. Whereas, you know what I mean? I think it's almost a requisite of love.
I would agree with that.
All right.
You know, I never intended any of this stuff that for it to happen with me, but...
This stuff, obviously, this whole thing to explode.
You know,
yeah.
And, I mean, it's not like it's a big deal. My life hasn't changed really dramatically.
Isn't there a feeling about that it's going to this year with the Batman thing and all that, that's going to hit into another stratosphere?
Well, that won't come up for 2 years. I don't know.
All right.
I don't know, perhaps. I mean, I still think people... We have a lot more control than people...
Okay.
You know, people. A lot of people advocate sort of responsibility, or when they kind of go, "Look, I'm a fucking actor. This is it. My life is going to change." If you hold on to it, you can keep your life very, very simple. And I think I've managed to do it so far. And then I have this girl who's like hugely important to me, and we have our own life, and it's why I don't really like talking about it, because it's something that is my own, and I manage for this to this point to keep it.
Okay, fair enough.
You know.
All right. Does anyone ever say, does management or artists or filmmakers ever say, keep it quiet, or they would want you
my
to
relationship?
Be... Yeah. All right.
You mean like John Lennon and...
Yeah, remember those days? No, I mean also the kids in Westlife at first. I mean, even in the pop business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or some of the younger stars, you know.
But that gives the impression that one is being sort of manufactured,
it does.
Then, doesn't
it?
Does,
it does. Or controlled.
And basically, with the whole agent thing, we employ them, you know what I mean?
Agent thing.
I mean, I have, I'm lucky that my agents and my friends are actually good friends.
Right.
But the basis of the relationship is that we employ them. We make the decisions.
Yeah.
They advise and help and all that. But I'm very, very lucky with the people in my life. I would consider them good friends. You know?
When you see the constant comparisons with Conor Farrell are there, I see you in a different niche. But I mean, you're seeing this, the Sunday Times, the next Conor Farrell. Does that bother you? I know he's an old time. You know him.
Mm.
Is that something you're kind of dissuading people from making the connection?
Well, I would think that...
Because he's kind of seen, and I mean, I'm not being critical, and I'll be careful how I phrase this, though I'll say it to you. He would be seen as having moved more towards the personality thing, having gone for the celebrity in every magazine in America for drugs, whoring around, his phrase, and, you know, being with hookers. It's almost like, that's what you can go for on one hand, as you can in rock and roll, or you can go for just, well, I'll fuck all that to one side and I'll actually just concentrate on my acting. I'm not saying he's not, but there's a perception that he's gone for the other edge of it.
Two things about that. The first being that Colin has definitely embraced all that, but because that is the way, it's not contrived. That's
right.
The one fundamental thing that it's... He just loves that. He loves meeting people. He loves meeting women. He loves drinking. He loves doing whatever the fuck is going. But he's always been like that. He's always been like that. So inevitably he's going
to
end
up... So it's not something he's adapted to be part of the kind of movie star thing. Okay.
It's just
get
the way...
Right.
Yeah, and that's the way he is. And it's brilliant because he's actually... He will go, you want to take a photo of you? Yeah, fuck it. And he'll go, someone meets him and says, you want a drink? He'll go, yeah. And so therefore it's... I would be obviously wary if someone went, right, hang on out, if I bad boy and if I ride her, then I mean, and what sort of fucking strategy as how to market
how to manage it, manufacture and sell yourself,
which I don't think very many people do. The second thing of all, the comparison thing is just lazy journalism.
Okay.
In my opinion, it's just it's using a tag, isn't it? It's a soundbite. It's something.
It's like
to
the next U2.
Well, yeah,
it used to be.
Man, people
every poor rock band in Ireland.
Exactly, and I've been since I started off acting. People have been saying to me, "Oh, up and coming." We still have that fucking up. Yeah, and whatever.
After 7 years.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So it's just
your overnight success this year?
Yeah.
After 7 years.
Exactly.
But you also think in what I said about Colin, there's no derogation or denigration of his commitment to acting.
No,
I think that when he's not doing that stuff, he disappears when he's doing his movie.
Mm.
He does, and you don't hear anything about him. So I think Jack Nicholson is the same. They do the work, and then there's a blowout period between films or plays or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think whatever, if you look, whatever film he's done, he's always good in them. He's always good in them. You know? Some of the choices I wouldn't agree with, but he's always good in the fucking film.
All right. How about your own choices? Do you choose carefully?
Very carefully.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. With what in mind, in terms of specific roles, why would you say, I mean, when you went for the film of Disco Pigs, was it because you'd done the play and you felt, yeah, I want to do the definitive movie? Want to work with Kirsten? I want to whatever.
The way that happened was, they wanted to cast it like really young, like 15, 16 year olds, because the character is 17 in the play,
turned
17. And I was 24 when they did the play, so, or did the film. So I think they went and they cast, and then I came in like the general actors en masse came in and did a reading for them. And I tried as best as I could not to let the character of the play or my involvement in it inform reading or the interpretation of the character in the film, because they were different and different creative people involved, and different actresses playing opposite, and so everything. So I know I didn't think that I, at the start, in fact, I didn't think in any way that I should be the person because I was too old. But I do, for me, it always starts on the page, always. Like, if it's a good script, it might be a fucking short movie by some young writer, and he gives it to you, and you go, well, that is brilliant. And then it might move, and then obviously other factors come into play, like the director, the other actors in it, well, that's basically it, actually. But or maybe the fact that it's very different from a role that you've played before, and you want to explore different parts of your craft, you know. But it's never been a strategy for me.
Do you feel fully committed to this?
To the game.
To acting, yeah. You know, the part of you that did want to do music, and the part of you that this kind of like seems to have, in a way, kind of just taken over. Do you still feel, this is where I want to be, this is where my soul is, this is kind of this is what I'm going to give my next...
I think I certainly am.
...working life to, or are you slowly getting there? You know, slowly falling more into place.
I think I certainly, like, I have acquired passion for that over the course of a few years. I also think that when I talked earlier about that buzz up the back of your spine, that I get that still, and... if that ever goes away, then maybe it's a waste of time. But I still get that. And like the anticipation that I have for opening this play in Galway, like, it's fucking huge. And it's really undiminished since the time, you know, I did Disco Pigs in Cork. And, you know, you still have those fucking anxiety dreams about walking on stage and not knowing what.
Having a line.
Yeah, and every actor has them, and they're all... But so, no, man, I love it. I'm the fucking luckiest man in the world. I mean... You know.
How much would you be driven by the multi-million dollar epics and all that stuff? I mean, is that a factor when you're offered a fortune? I don't know if you're offered a fortune for Batman or that. You'd say that would be handy, or that will ease life for a time, or it might pollute me, or it might be too much, it might fucking take me down the wrong road, or I can get a nice little house for myself and my girlfriend.
Well, I have a nice little house for myself. Yeah, all right. So, but first of all, the way it works is they offer you the part, and then you go yes, and then all the negotiation begins. So before you know, when you take the part, you don't know how much money or how little you're going to get. So therefore, it's never really driven economically for me or financially.
But you said if you'd stayed in line, you probably would make a better living. I don't think that's true anymore,
is it? Did I say that?
Yeah, I saw that quote somewhere. I don't think that's true anymore. It might be becoming not true.
And I think there was
probably a long period when it was absolutely true.
I was shy, but that didn't, you know, like I said, I don't have my lifestyle is not extravagant anyway. And
I had to get you onto a guy who does surround sound or systems for your whole house. Did you ever get that in? No.
No, man.
A friend of mine does
that.
Dublin. I can't afford it from him yet, but he keeps saying, Joe, as soon as you're ready, stop all these hi-fis in different rooms. He says, I'll set up a system.
One system goes.
Dolores O'Riordan got it done. I believe it's fucking fantastic. You know, just touch a wall and it just comes out. You can imagine hearing your favorite music. Zappa would love it. It's like Zappa's dream. So the idea of kind of not of being polluted, of this kind of thing in your spine being slowly polluted by following the book, ain't gonna happen.
Well, I don't. I certainly never ever turn down things. But it's not about me going, look, man, I turned shit down. Yeah, it just turns
not going well. Like, I've got this big gig.
No, that I'm fucking cool, man. I'm where it's at because I turned down.
All right, things,
which some actors do. They go, look, I was offered two. Yeah, whatever. Like, you know, I think personally, I can understand. I think any actor who's offered a shit script or a fucking bucket load of cash, or with a bucket load of cash, would go, fuck off, why not? My thing is to leave, if I can, I hope this won't be eroded, but my CV that I can look back and go, there's no one that I go, don't speak.
Oh, yeah, okay. Don't bring that one up.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And so far it hasn't. So.
But then you'd almost recognise I risk losing that chill up my spine if I go. You'd probably identify that in advance. Did you get your level-headedness from your folks? You seem to be a very pragmatic, grounded individual. I can't imagine I'd talk to you in 10 years and you'd have lost the plot.
Well, that's nice of you to say that.
No, I would hope not. I hope not, you know. Because I talked with someone like Conor McPherson, who went a bit bananas, and he talked to me about it when his play opened in London and the critics were saying everything and he drank too much. And he kind of, and I watched him over 3 years nearly lose his life. I don't know if you know Conor's story. And I just thought, Jesus Christ, you know, being propelled into it too fast can't fuck up your head. I don't get that sense that you will, you know, but so do you feel your folks gave you some kind of level-headed grounding base?
Yeah, they're very...
They're not in theatre or acting, right?
No, they're teachers.
Well, they're both teachers, yeah. They're both teachers,
aren't they? Well, my dad's he's involved now in different... he was a Kegger Scull at like an inspector, and then he's now higher up in the department.
So you couldn't go mitching?
Certainly not.
Okay, so do they have this level-headed kind of approach that seems to keep you?
Well, this would be all very alien, I think, to them. But
this world.
Yeah, but they're together a long time, and we've a great family life, and they were brilliant parents, you know. Right. I mean, I had my wild years and all that. Like any fucking teenager.
Around what time? 15, 16, 17, 18?
Yeah, around that time.
All right.
And you know, for me. Don't my parents...
Did you break their hearts, though?
I think to a degree, you know, but they're easily mended, aren't they? I think, you know, more than... People like George Harrison, someone I've always fucking admired.
Right.
Hugely, because he... Talk about keeping your head when all around are fucking...
They're losing theirs.
Always.
And blaming it on you.
Yeah, but he is he was the man, and he's a big... I've been playing ukulele lately because of George Harrison. I just think that he's...
Because his obsession with George Formby.
It was, but also...
You know George used to turn up at talent competitions in Blackpool on the slide? Did anyone ever tell you that?
No.
One picture. He did a talent competition and he came fifth. That was so ironic.
Did he bring you?
Yeah, he did a George Formby song. And he didn't say anything about George Harrison, he just said Jimmy Smith or whatever it was.
He's the man.
Okay, so that level, that approach.
Well, I mean, there's loads of examples. My parents, I hope I've got some common sense from them.
Right.
Those people in this world who have managed... Brendan Gleeson, another person I admire deeply, who's managed just to go, yeah, I'm doing my work, but...
You said earlier a quote that I have to be careful about, and I'm running this to you because you said it. You said the chill you got is as good drugs. Now, the assumption is you know what the feeling from good drugs is.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go wild on drugs? Was that part of it? Was it just D? Was it like everybody dropped D in the 90s and that was that?
You know, I haven't... I don't think I've been... You know, I was like any kid, you know. I was never an angel, but I never, you know, I always managed to do good at school. And
do you not want any association with any kind of drug usage?
No.
Even if it's something like with your mates and it was a couple of V or a few joints.
Do you know
why? Is even that a problem?
Just the reason why I wouldn't really don't want to talk about it is my granny.
Your granny?
Genuinely, my granny would read this and it would just actually wreck her life.
Oh, all right. Okay.
So I couldn't say it. This is off the right.
Okay, I
ain't fucking indulging in everything, but I really couldn't just because.
All right.
My granny couldn't. She wouldn't be able to.
It's great, isn't it? Okay.
It's the truth, though.
You still indulge, do you? You're still going crazy now?
I mean.
A little.
I mean, same as everybody else. I don't think anybody's.
Don't you? It's GHB. Is that the new drug I believe they use in Hollywood? It's a killer. I'm doing a book, big research on drugs in Hollywood, and there's some new thing now. It's liquid. And people fucking in your drink. And it's River Phoenix territory out in the laneway after the gig, so be very careful. It's called GHB, and some clubs now have a sign, not GHB. You might say, what the fuck is that? That's what it is, so be careful. So, I mean, just go back to that thing about the parents. I mean, have they had fears about the sharkish world of popular music. The movie industry can be similarly sharkish. You can be taken out to Hollywood and basically fucked metaphorically until they're finished with you, until maybe the looks fade or they feel we can't sell them anymore. I mean, I saw a sad thing there about Sean Penn complaining recently because Colin was getting all the roles. And maybe Sean can't accept he's coming to 40 and a lot of the kids might want to see him, but he's in this Mystic River, I believe he's great. They want to see Colin Farrell.
Mm.
So isn't the Hollywood thing, doesn't have the same potential for ripping your soul inside out and then throwing you on the scrap heap? Would they not have also expressed similar concerns about the madness of all that?
Well, the truth be told, Batman... which I will do after this, will be the first Hollywood picture I've done. And the films that I've made up until now...
have all been more.
European, small budget, they'd be nice parts. But, you know, so... And a lot of theatre I've been doing in the meantime as well. So it hasn't been hugely glamorous in any way. Or doesn't give a whiff of debauchery or exploitation, okay, any of the stuff that, okay, I've done. So I think that, that my parents have certainly been, you know, and everybody they've met, and also I would have to say this, and I'm not saying it, I've met some of the most intelligent, interesting, talented people in this game, like, since I started doing it. And of the pricks and the assholes, I met a couple, but it, okay, that never worked with them, really, you know.
Okay, and they're a small percentage.
I'm sure, yeah.
But that's the difference, a lot would say, between European culture, European film and theatre, and then what you may encounter in Hollywood. Because I talked to Adrian Dunbar last Sunday, you know, the actor. You worked with Adrian. Well, he was just saying, you know, that there was so much bullshit in Hollywood, and in terms of that drug still fuels Hollywood, and you're still going to meet coke-fueled assholes nearly every day. So would you be ready for what might happen there, which at that sense might turn around your experience thus far? You haven't really thought about it.
No, I know.
Okay.
The thing about that is, again, I think you make these choices. You choose to be in those environments. You know, nobody forces you to go to a party and you go, hang on, this is full of cunts. You just leave. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or nobody forces you to, like, if you're in a room and someone's going, hey man, you look great, take your top off. You just go fuck off.
Yeah.
So these actors going, yeah, if it's drugs everywhere, if it's there and you don't want to do it, fuck off. If it's, you meet someone you don't like, don't deal with them.
All right.
And we have the best life in the world.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? I hate actors complaining about, like, oh yeah, man, it was terrible. I had to do loads of scenes in the rain. Like, fuck off. You're getting paid.
I thought you complained about the scene in the house in fucking 28 Days Later because it was pissing rain with the wind machine.
Well, I didn't. I don't think I complained. I think I always qualified it by saying I was cold, but Jesus, I prefer to be doing this than sitting in a place like this for fucking, you know, 12 or 8 hours of a day.
It would drive you mad. You'd get no chill up the spine of that.
Nah, I mean, and that, it does, and people, you know, I had nervous exhaustion. You fuck off, like, just don't, you don't. Really...
But you've been lucky, haven't you, Killian? You have been lucky in terms of, I'm talking about Charlotte, maybe to get one good gig a year. You have been lucky in terms of getting good breaks.
Yeah, but I'm sure that they would, you know... Still, in the case, they're not going to hang around with idiots. You know?
Oh, no, I know that. I mean, she got her break in, you know, about Adam.
Mm.
And that was kind of like, she went to Hollywood, she did the Paramount rounds, people tried to fuck her, and she said she wouldn't fuck, so she didn't get calls, you know, which is going to be the case.
Well, I'm sure it's much harder for women, you see.
It is. Brendan Gleeson said the same to me, because Brendan and Charlotte started in The Passion Machine together in 86, same year, same season, same play. And I've watched how he can go on and do, like, that stuff with you. His hair's falling out, he's getting flabby. Nobody gives a fuck. Charlotte's getting around 40, and she's coming up to 40, and it's kind of like, uh-oh, don't think we want her anymore. Mm. No one wants to ride her.
Mm.
You know, this kind of philosophy.
I'd accept fully that it's harder for women.
Yeah.
And I have been very lucky as well. I would concede that, like, should be my middle fucking name.
Yeah.
But I do think, to a degree, you make your own luck. And I do think that actors have more power than they sometimes let on.
In terms of choices.
Choices, and also in terms of the environment and these stories you hear of them, like, moaning about things, you know.
All right. But there is a kind of dearth. There was a dearth of work in Ireland last year, which can lead into talking about Druid. You know, lots of actors, because of the cutbacks in theatre and, you know, people could only stay in offices all day hoping they could stage a production. Lots of people, last year was one of the worst years in Irish theatre history.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because everyone was afraid. And then the film thing, too, that the film board was going to cut 481. So in that context, to even be working with Gary, who has done this hugely successful run of JB and seeing plays, I mean, that must have seemed like a godsend to you when she expressed interest. Or did you have somebody else saying, you're hot, we can do more movies, don't give your time to theatre? Any agent or director saying, you know?
No, that's, again, the people that I have...
Looking for you.
Yeah.
Who's your agent? Can I mention your agent?
Oh, please do. Richard Cook,
Richard Cook?
Is in Ireland, yeah.
All right, okay. Cook, is there somebody with Richard Cook?
Lisa Richard. Lisa Richard is the agency.
Yeah, I know them. Okay, yeah. They're Collins.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Rhys.
Yeah,
okay, cool. So they're good people.
They're brilliant.
They're good people to have working for you. Okay, so this idea that nobody came along and said, don't fucking do theatre, you can't come down to Galway for rehearsal and touring.
No, because they know, I think that, if you've good people, you say, listen, I always, they know that I like to do, I mean, like at least one play a year, you know.
Right. Why would you think you'll hold on to that?
I would hope, yeah.
Because there's a lot of actors, you know, be they the greats, be they the Burtons, the Harrises, who just somewhere along the way said, fuck, I'm never going back to stage. Then poor Richard Harris, 60, says, fuck it, Pirandello, back to the West End, and he's able to make his comeback.
Mm.
But his soul was eaten away by 127 shitty films, and he admits it. He said he made 3 good movies and 124 for the money. So he's the essence of the kind of actor we were talking about earlier. And then at 60, thank God he could rescue himself, and he did The Field the same year. But he was so bitter and angry at himself for giving up theatre.
Yeah.
You know, so have you made a decision, no matter what I get into, whatever's ahead of me, I'm going to do my best to reroute myself back on a live stage?
Well, at the moment, it's more about, I still feel I have stuff to learn and I really want to improve.
Right, okay.
And
right.
That's the best place to do it. I certainly think that, like, later on, it brings you back to the fucking root of what you're about, this live thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that chill you got in the classroom.
Yeah, man. No, and again, it's very rare you get that extended scenes in films that give you that thing. You do get them, like, but you certainly do, especially more in more dramatic-based films. Like, but theatre, it's just magic. I mean, what's so great about theatre is it can be fucking magic or it can be appalling. You can just go, like, did you know what I mean? Or it can just take you out.
What, when something just dies?
Or if it's just a bad production, you know what I mean? It can't be rescued, or it's bad performances.
Yeah.
But that's what's beautiful.
But imagine, Charles told me that's the worst thing in the world of acting, to be committed to a play that from the first week you know is dead and dying.
Yeah, that must be fucking terrible.
You know, and be told you have another 3 weeks, another 21 nights, and you have every day to get up and go, oh my God, you know? But obviously that's not what you're feeling working with Gary, and if there's someone you want to learn from, she's tough. She's going to push you. And is that what you're finding? Is that part of this process?
Well, I've worked with her twice before.
In what?
As the Country Boy, first thing I did, and then I did Julie.
When was that? Oh, right, okay.
The Country Boy was...
So you know Gary's modus operandi?
I do, yeah. I do, and I think she's the best around, like, you know.
All right. In what sense, though? What makes her so great? And related to this play? You know, in this, you're a liar, you're a deceiver, you're a kind of charmer, you're the quintessential Irish charmer. You're going to be fucking tagged with that label, the playboy, no matter whether you deny it or not, aren't you, after this play? But what is it about this that she's really helping you focus, hone in on?
I suppose, first of all, the most important thing with her is her depth of knowledge on this, on Sing and this play and this, the environment that it's set in. And then second of all, she's just a fucking good director. Like, she can see through a text. She is able to, spatially, she's unbelievable the way she works a space, you know? And because this all happens within one room over the course of 24 hours.
Yeah.
And it goes mental, like. And I think she really sees truth, like the truth of the emotion of the thing. Like, there's loads, she'll always say, like, no thinks acting, just fucking.
No what?
Thinks acting.
No so, thinks.
Like, you're an actor on stage thinking line, just fucking say it through, be
true to it, which is so.
It's so great. Like, so your actor's like serving the role rather than the role serving you for a great performance, you know. That you serve the role as
which is ugly to watch sometimes, isn't it?
I'd imagine so, yeah.
No, I don't mean for you as an actor or as a director, I mean even as an audience person.
Yeah.
I've watched a role as written be polluted by somebody who's just using ego to proclaim, I'm a dying great actor. Yeah. I find that kind of...
Look how many times you can break up this line.
Yeah.
You know, just say that. People don't speak like that. You know, just say it through and give it some truth and give it some conviction, like, you know. And then she can see, because in this play it all turns, like, he goes, it's tragedy, farce,
yeah,
violence, you know, all within, like, space of a page, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really exciting, and she can, it's just exciting being in a room with her, and then she can give you a note where you just go, that's it.
Like an observation on something.
Yeah. And she just...
That brings it into focus.
Yeah. Or equally, she'll give you a note, and then she'll go, actually... Throw that away, that more completely, you know, which is great because it's a collaboration, and it's not like her going. It's not the director and you. It's you and the director working things out.
But you're still the person who defines it in the end, aren't you? No matter what advice and guidance she gives you, Christy is going to be as you see him.
Well, I would say I would bring some of my natural personality to him. I would think, and in combined with Gary's instinct and my instinct, it's a combination of instincts,
all right.
But ultimately I'm the physical embodiment of the character for that hour and a half on stage. So, but ultimately, it'll be Gary Hines's production. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like an opera.
Yeah.
Sounds so's version of. But you're obviously enjoying, I'm going to give, just give me a couple of minutes more. You're obviously enjoying being involved in this particular production. It clearly is bringing back, I can see the shivers in the back of your spine going up the chair. It has, it's totally reconnected you with that first feeling you got in that classroom, isn't it?
Yeah, man. I mean,
like even talking about it now, it's great to see you're fired up, passionate, and even at the end of a day's rehearsal and you're rushing up to have a meal, I know. But isn't that good? You know, a lot of people can come out of a rehearsal feeling wasted and uninspired.
No, none of those words could apply really. It is great, and I'm, you know, Druid is special. I think, you know, I mean, it's our theatre is like it's this weird mix of terror and I don't know, euphoria sort of.
Depending on which way it goes.
Yeah, or even like as you go on stage, there's that thing, you know.
Yeah.
Terrorphoria.
I don't know. We've got a new Joycean word for the 21st century. Okay. Well, just give me a pen picture of where you, how you hope, if I was talking to you in this time 5 years, how would you hope to have evolved it? Would you have hoped to have married? Did you want to marry? Any dreams of that, or is that all put on hold? And how would you hope to be acting? Where would you hope to be acting?
I don't know.
Get back to you in the marriage.
I keep the personal decisions to myself.
Okay,
fair. And then the acting. I don't know. I just like, I mean, like I said, like I'm thrilled with the way things are going. I'm very happy, and I'm very happy to be working with the people I'm working with.
Right. So if I come out and say I'm starting a Frank Zappa tribute band,
I'll be there like a shot.
Fuck that, man.
Like a shot.
Is there any aspect you might just put together a band and still do that too? You know the way Johnny Depp did it, didn't he? Some people like that still.
Yeah, they do. But I mean, I play away, and I play my friends, we get together and play music.
You don't play publicly, do you? Could you? Would that be a bit of a hassle, maybe, at this point?
I think it'd be a hassle. I just don't think people would take it fucking seriously, you know?
Oh, you're still 20-year-old showing off. But you can play a guitar and play a drum lick.
Yeah.
And how much of the acting is that?
Of what, showing off?
The 20-year-old showing off how well you can play a drum lick.
Jesus, man. I'll let people decide that for themselves. Thanks for joining.
Hi, Joe Jackson here again. I thank you for listening to this edition of the Joe Jackson Interviews podcast. And don't forget, you can check out some of my articles on my website, joejacksoninterviewer.com.